Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Tulsa Ballet continues its season this weekend with a restaging of an important milestone for the company when 4 years ago it commissioned then freelance choreographer Edward Liang to create its first full-length ballet. The result, Romeo and Juliet, featuring the music of Sergei Prokofiev, received national attention from Dance Magazine and great audience reaction. Now Liang, the artistic director of Ballet Met in Columbus, Ohio, joins the company to restage this classic story of forbidden love, which will then travel to his own company next year. Edward Liang's career spans a great dancing career, first for New York City Ballet, then to the Broadway show Fosse, then Netherlands Dance Theater, and then as an independent and international choreographer. Over the next 10 years, he would create work for the Bolshoi and Kirov ballets in Russia, New York City and Houston ballets in America, Shanghai and Singapore Dance Theater, along with works for Tulsa Ballet. In 2013, he was named the artistic director for Ballet Met in Ohio and continues to create award-winning choreographer for both his own company as well as other domestic and international companies. You can see his first full-length ballet, now restaged, this year, almost 4 years exactly to the date, as Tulsa Ballet presents Romeo and Juliet by Edward Liang this Friday through Sunday at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. And he joins me today on Studio Tulsa. Edward Liang, welcome back to Studio Tulsa and welcome back to Tulsa.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. What's it like coming back to the company now and revisiting this work that you created? I remember when you came on when you were creating Romeo and Juliet. Yes. And said, you know, I didn't know what I was getting into when I was doing this first full length, but of course the results were great.
Thank you.
And so what's it like coming back to the company and revisiting this piece?
You know, this particular full length is very, very special to me. This was my first full length. And the reason why it's so special is because Marcello Angelini, the artistic director, his faith in me to take on such a huge and prolific story like Romeo and Juliet. So it has a lot of my heart. It has a little bit of everything for me. And to come back to Tulsa Ballet and to see the company grow and to revisit a piece that's very special to me is a real treat.
Now, it was a sort of a risk for Tulsa Ballet because I think you were the first commissioned choreographer to do a full length for the company.
Absolutely.
And, of course, the results were really beautiful. They really were. So when you come back to do a full length, I know that even a shorter ballet, one act,
yes,
there's tweaking that happens until you finally get it in that final form. Is there even more tweaking on a full length just because of the forces involved?
You know, what's really fantastic about this time this week is that I have more time to tweak in the sense of energy and story and connecting. It's less about creating the steps and more about really syncing up all the characters and really diving deeper into the storyline. And that, I think, for the dancers and for myself, creates more excitement, more passion into it, and more investment. It's always wonderful working with Tulsa Ballet dancers because they're just world-class athletes. They're world-class ballet dancers. And it's incredible that Tulsa Ballet is able to attract such incredible talent.
Talk about syncing up. What's happening in the background with the main characters, with the, I guess, the movement of the main characters. How are you delving deeper into the story? Give us a couple of examples.
Like, for instance, when you first see Juliet's mother, she comes in and the scene is where she's very excited. She has a relationship, a very deep relationship with her nurse. And even just tweaking yesterday, I was talking with one of the guest dancers who's playing the mother and coming in and asking her to really give examples and really from herself show the complex relationship that she has, meaning she loves her daughter. This is just my take on it. She runs a huge house. There's a schedule. She does not really love her husband. I think that she is very much attracted to status. She's a little bit colder. So there's a moment when Juliet runs up to the mother, thanking her mother for this new dress for the ball. And she's taken aback. And I wanted to see the arc of it. So I wanted to see the impact of the hug, how she responded to the hug, how she kind of recoils a little bit and then melts into remembering that this is her daughter. And so these are the subtleties and timing that is, I think, paramount for any sort of production. And what I'm really aiming for is these artists to not just think of themselves as dancers. I want them to create
character.
The world.
Yeah.
I want them to create the world of Romeo and Juliet. I want them to even embody it even more. And that creates more of a relationship than ever for the audience and the artists on stage. I mean, that's what the incredible thing about theater is that you automatically feel the relationship. And if the dancers and the artists are that much more invested, it brings the audience fully into the world.
Well, of course, as you well know, this Prokofiev score gives you so much with leitmotifs for every character, with this wonderful array of music that connotes violence. It connotes the ultimate in tenderness. It gives you a lot to work with, doesn't it?
Does Absolutely. It not? You know, that was one of the things that I had to kind of put aside was how intimidated I was to choreograph to such a masterpiece. This score, believe it or not, Prokofiev had to sell it and shop it around for 3 years before it got commissioned, which is kind of shocking to me. This is one of the most lush, heartbreaking, soaring pieces of music that has ever been created. And what's amazing about it is that you just follow what he's created and it tells the story. And that I had to kind of just put aside my intimidation and just follow the music.
Now, a lot of choreographers, when they're doing a Romeo and Juliet, you know, the flashy, you know, the sword work and all that sort of stuff is a big part of it. You feel like, does that help the story or take away from the story? Because essentially the story is a love story.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's so many different layers to this piece of music and the story. I was so grateful to be able to collaborate with Steve White, and he's a fantastic award-winning stunt coordinator. At the time, I was living in New York City, and we would meet on a monthly or weekly basis, depending on our schedule, and he would teach me fencing, and we would videotape it, and then we would start working on actual scenarios.
A stylized version of fencing.
And I wanted to keep it true to form, but also at the same time, I wanted to try to blend a little bit more of dancing into it. So it's not just pure fencing. And I was really happy with what resulted in the product. And Steve is so collaborative and incredible to work with. I was very grateful. But I think it really does add to the story. I mean, there's so many different textures and layers to this production. Happy that it resulted good.
When you're doing that, when you're creating sort of a stylized version of fencing, what is the challenge for the dancers? Does that make it more challenging?
Yes.
I would think so.
Yes, absolutely. But what is amazing about it is if you set the bar high and you don't tell anyone that it's really hard, I don't think that there's a question. These artists all just, you know, water rises to its own level.
Right.
And they really are world-class athletes and artists. And they were able to, you know, learn the sequence very, very quickly.
There's a couple of moments in this ballet which multiple choreographers have taken, the balcony scene, for example. That's something that, you know, even if you don't do a full-length Romeo and Juliet, you might do that as a pas de deux.
Right.
Probably the death scene is also sort of another moment that a choreographer might just take on as a pas de deux or a small project.
Right.
What's it like to do these? You know a lot of people have put steps to this particular piece of music. What is the challenge in trying to create something that, is it just basically staying true to your own vision, or is there any sort of added challenge to doing something like the balcony scene?
Well, it really depends on the type of production for a full length that you're going to do. And this is just my opinion. Doing a full length, you can go two different ways. I don't really believe in the middle ground. What I mean by that is if you're going to do a classical full length, it doesn't read so well when you have a hybrid. Either you do a really classic form of Romeo and Juliet or any sort of full length, or you go really contemporary and you stay within the storyline, but you put it on a tilt. Uh-huh. With tackling Romeo and Juliet, the balcony scene and the death scene, I really wanted to create a classic production for Tulsa Ballet that hopefully will live on for a long time for this company. At the same time, is that you want to be as creative and put your own stamp onto it. And I kind of put that aside. I think that you want to just show up, make choices and steps and musicality the best that you can, and not project any sort of thing onto it. That's the difference, I think, what I was trying to do. When you're making a non-story 30-minute ballet, you put more little physical tricks and things like that. But
I would call them gimmicks, but they're not really gimmicks.
Exactly.
But they're not gimmicks. But they're,
they are.
Yeah, and, gimmicky.
You know, yes, exactly. You want to have a little bit of just fun with it, and you put a little stamp. I think with this is that you want to be as pure to the form as possible. And that, I think, is really hard. But what was really fun is just sticking with the story, having constantly questioning, why did I create this particular step? Is it moving the story forward? Is it moving the motion forward? And then putting a little tweaks into the death scene or of timing and story, just a little bit.
Yeah. Now, it's been 4 years since you said that, and you've done a lot of work since then. You've become a artistic director yourself in Columbus at Ballet Met. When you come back to that ballet, is some of it new to you in a way? Or saying, oh, I did it this way?
Well, it's a blend, you know. It's so funny. Sometimes...
I assume somebody's keeping a book.
Yes.
Yeah.
We definitely have a book of just a lot of notes. And the two ballet mistresses at Tulsa Ballet and Marcello are fantastic at being able to restage and know what's going on. They're very, very organized. But what's funny is that it's a blend. I don't really have a hard time remembering the steps that I create. I remember most of it. And it's surprising because, you know, as the years go on, you create more ballets.
Right.
But I still remember most of my ballets. But on the other hand, there's some scenes where I do remember the steps, but I look at them like, wow, who made this? It doesn't even feel like I've created it.
Now, do you go in and say, okay, let's fix this?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that what's important when you go revisit it is that the ultimate goal is to push the story forward and to help the dancers make them look the best that they can and find maybe new steps that might be more organic for these artists. What's beautiful about this craft and what we do is that nothing, hopefully, is set in stone. I'm still alive. Nothing is permanent. And that is... it's live music and live art and live dancing. It's moment to moment, and you want to keep that.
You know, it's funny when you compare dance to, say, like the theater. The theater, there's that same process at play until you publish it.
Absolutely.
And once you publish it, that's the version. Talking to many choreographers over the years, it's that final definitive form is a much rarer beast until the choreographers are in the grave.
Absolutely. And then same thing, you know, working in New York City Ballet for so long is that what was incredible I've never worked with George Balanchine, but working with Jerome Robbins per se.
Yeah. And you dance a lot of his ballets.
Is that there's different versions for different dancers. So you have this huge palette, even though let's take, for instance, Fancy Free there, it's a masterpiece. But there's a couple of different versions so that you can have different colors to play with. So it's not set in stone, even though this is a masterpiece and it's notated and it's published. You know, there's still possibilities. Even with George Balanchine ballets, there's different versions for different ballerinas. So it's very different than theater. Yes.
Yeah. Now, since you set Romeo and Juliet, you've done, I think, at least one other full length, and you have another full length coming.
Yes.
And what's interesting about them is they're the classic story ballets, Romeo and Juliet, and you went to a Cinderella, which I assume was Prokofiev.
Yes.
And this spring, you'll be doing a world premiere of Tchaikovsky's Sleeping Beauty.
Yes.
That's, I'm sure that's exciting, but that is very different language. Or do you say, nope, this is going to be an Edward Liang ballet, and even though there's all this Tchaikovsky and Russian baggage with this, it's going to be your Sleeping Beauty.
Well, you know, I think that it's a little different choreographing for my own company. It is my take on these stories, and it's still in the classical ballet idiom, and what's different about it is that I'm also in charge of making sure that the whole organization is moving forward. And what's amazing about Ballet Met and the Ballet Met Academy is where we have 1,700 students.
Wow.
It's a huge academy. And, you know, along with Tulsa Ballet, we're one of the top 20 ballet companies in the United States. And it's really important for me to integrate both the company and the academy. It's something that I'm really passionate about, having access for all these students. So we had, along with Nutcracker, we had probably over 150 academy students a part of Cinderella. And then we're going to have close to 100 for these four performances in Sleeping Beauty. So it's not just creating an Edward Liang full length. It's creating, I think, hopefully,
A ballet met,
yeah. And that's fully kind of integrated with each other, and that it helps understand and solidify what our role in the community is.
Yeah. When I think of the Tchaikovsky full lengths versus the Prokofiev full lengths, you know, the scores are so much more modern in Prokofiev that it maybe allows a choreographer more leeway than, yes, I think of in Tchaikovsky. Have you found that to be the case as you're working through the choreography?
You know, last weekend I was quickly in Columbus, and I worked with the Academy, and we choreographed the Garland scene. And it's 40 in one cast, just for the Garland scene, there's 40 Ballet Met Academy dancers, ranging from 8 till 17. And, you know, I loved it. You know, the first time I choreographed on young students was Cinderella last year, and I was a little afraid. I didn't know if I was going to like the experience. But I absolutely loved it. I mean, these young artists come so excited, so hungry, and it's infectious. So with Tchaikovsky, I think that you are absolutely correct, is that it's a little bit more stately. Mm-hmm. It's more big. For Sleeping Beauty, I think that you definitely have less to play with in terms of changing things. But I've choreographed different pieces to Tchaikovsky. I did a piece for Shanghai Ballet like many, many years ago. And there was a great juxtaposition because it was a very classical piece, but I did a very contemporary ballet. So there's certain pieces of music you have the ability to play, and then certain pieces you have less.
When I think of full-length story ballet, it's a little, you're sort of set in whatever that story's about.
Absolutely. Yeah. At the same time, there's choreographers that are really well known, like Mats Ek, Nacho Duato, that use the contemporary modern idiom to really turn the story upside down. I don't think it would be the particular right fit for Ballet Met, but it does work. And it goes back to what I was saying, is that you either go one extreme or you stay with the tried and true, because somewhere in the middle, in my opinion, always kind of falls flat.
My guest today is a choreographer, Edward Liang, who is also the artistic director of Ballet Met in Columbus, Ohio. That's a new title since he was last here to set and to create Romeo and Juliet.
Yes.
Tulsa Ballet is representing his Romeo and Juliet this weekend, Friday through Sunday, at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. It was created 4 years ago, and now the ballet is reviving it. And I know the plan is to maybe take that other places down the road as well.
I mean, it's really incredible that Tulsa Ballet is reviving Romeo and Juliet. You have live music and these incredible dancers and this classic story. it's very hard to come by where you have all these different components, especially live music. And I'm very passionate about that. I'm very excited.
Now, since you were last year with Romeo and Juliet, you've now taken on the helm of Ballet Met. How's that affected your choreography as far as the time to do it? Obviously, there are demands because you're creating a couple of new pieces every season, it looks like, so mm-hmm. far. But how's that changed things for you?
It's been a balancing act. There's definitely less time. I am not an artistic director that only just wants to stay in the studio. I kind of have my fingers in all different pots, whether it's, you know, creating the business model, development, marketing, growing the academy. That's one of the things why I took on this role. But it does limit me in terms of time, and it limits me in terms of time going out and either restaging or choreographing. But I'm still very lucky where I get to decide which projects I want to take on. Last year was fantastic. I got to do projects at the Egg Theater and the National Ballet in Beijing. I did Vienna. I'm very, very lucky that way where I get to pick a little bit more. But it's a balancing act, and it's not easy. But every day I go home and I'm very grateful that I do something that I absolutely love.
Now, your own experience has probably prepared you for what sounds like a really big company at Ballet Met with all those students that you have in your academy. But you came up through American Ballet School, right?
School of American Ballet, yes.
And then New York City Ballet, a huge company.
Yes.
Netherlands Dance Theater with Jerry Killian. Were you thinking as you were going through some of these experiences that, you know, the people you were listening to, the choreographers or the business managers, I'm going to be that one of those days?
Absolutely not. I was very tunnel vision on my dance career. I mean, that's, what's amazing about this career is that you get to do incredible things and you have amazing experiences. The hard part about this career is it's short. And I was just really passionate about dancing as much as I could and experiencing as much, whether it was on Broadway, whether it was modern companies, classical ballet companies. I was more focused on that. But I think you live life in life's terms. It's great to think that you can try to control it, but it kind of happens and you make choices. And I came back from choreographing a ballet at the Bolshoi, and I checked a box that was a goal that I never thought that I would accomplish. And I came back to New York City, and I was kind of reevaluating my career, reevaluating what was important to me, what I wanted to do. I've been on the road for 10 years, traveling a lot. And then I got headhunted by Ballet Met to just put my name in the hat if I was interested. And they had to call me 3 times because this was just not something that I was interested. But what got me was their openness and just saying, just come and interview. See what you might be interested in this. See how, if this is the right fit. And when I got there, I didn't know that I was so passionate about growing and being a part of something, growing a business, being a part of a community. And truthfully is that I really try to emulate and see what Marcello Angelini has created here in Tulsa.
And, you know, most of us thought he'd be gone in 3 years. He'd go to someplace bigger.
Right.
Of course, now he's 21st season and he's just built an amazing company.
It is spectacular what he's created. And that has given me hope in terms of investment in your own career, meaning that being a part of something has its ups and downs. You know, when you fly in and you're a choreographer, you don't have to deal with personalities
or
as much.
Budget deficits or
exactly.
anything.
Exactly. Or, you know, being able to bring people into the conversation, whether it's the community, the board, any sort of stakeholders. But it's been a fantastic, wild learning curve that I'm so grateful for this opportunity. And I had no idea that I would like it so much in terms of budget and seeing something that you pour your heart and soul into and that you can see it grow. And it's not just the number crunching, but when you see this 19-year-old dancer that you found 3 years ago and brought, you know, different dancers to the community and seeing them grow as artists. And I never witnessed that and felt that until now. So there's definitely ups and downs. I think everyone understands running a ballet company or any company.
Any nonprofit or
exactly. Yeah. It's a slippery slope. There's ups and downs. And the workload is massive. But there are also great rewards to it.
How is the city taking to the new Ballet Met under your leadership? What's your sense?
I'm really excited. You know, that's why I also took on this role is that, you know, for regional companies like Tulsa Ballet and Ballet Met, Tulsa Ballet not as much because Marcello has created a world-class ballet company here. What was really exciting is that the community was hungry for change and moving forward, and they're completely bought in. And to feel support like that gives you a little bit more push and a positive and really kind of working that extra bit more and pushing the boundaries and not being afraid of making a mistake and bring, I think, similar to what Marcello's doing, world-class ballets that the community has never been able to see. That is a huge, huge reward. That it's incredible to be in the audience and just kind of close your eyes and then just take in the energy. These little bits of reward is, you want to take it when it comes.
Yeah. Well, we wish you great success with this revival of Romeo and Juliet.
Thank you.
And who knows where it will go next. And good luck with the next full length, which is Sleeping Beauty, for your own company this spring.
Thank you.
Edward, thanks very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Choreographer Edward Liang speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. He choreographed Romeo and Juliet for Tulsa Ballet back in 2012. The company revives this full-length ballet this weekend with performances Friday through Sunday at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center's Chapman Music Hall with live music accompaniment, the score of Sergei Prokofiev, performed by the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra. For ticket information, call 918-749-6006. We're going to leave you with a little bit of this luscious score by Prokofiev. Studio Tulsa is produced by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.